What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Like professional wrestling, but we like professional wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrito. And Chris, coming across the newswire late, due to Wheeler Yuta, Top Flight, and JD Drake no longer being able to make the 5-1 card for PWG, there's been some changes to the card. Pertinent to my interest, the Briscoe brothers making their grand return to PWG to take on Aussie Open. Pertinent to your interest, Shane Haste will be coming in to fight Jack Cartwheel. Now, do you have any interest in flying out here and doing your slapjack number one fan gimmick?
Flying out there? If Shane Haste invites me, I will gladly don the mask and lead the slapjackalopes to greater victory and greater glory. But
that would go over well in that Globe Theater crowd.
It would be a privilege to be asked to don the gym shorts and the hockey mask.
Oh man, I think I had possibly the weirdest interaction I've had at a grocery store last night. Let me tell you about this.
Okay.
You know how when you're standing in line, sometimes the person in front of you will go, "Oh, I forgot something," and they'll run off to go get it. And you go, okay, that's cool. Probably something necessary or something important that they forgot that was on their list. Maybe something small, even like a condiment or something. This woman comes back with one of those ready-made cracker and cheese platters and puts it on there. And I go, I don't usually talk at grocery stores. I'm not usually the most gregarious person in line, but that one, I just out loud, I go, that is the most unusual last second purchase I've ever seen. And this woman's card is like, it's a Carvel ice cream cake, shrimp cocktail, chicken, like the fresh chicken, but it's like reduced to like $4 because it's been out for a while. It's just a ton of food. And she goes, yeah, I just got off a plane from Mexico. And I'm like, okay, cool. And I'm watching her with all this food. It's like, in case she needs a snack for the night.
What you described there made it sound like she's setting up like a spread for a party.
I thought so instead, too. I thought it was
instead just one person.
With my friend and our refrigerator's empty. And I just got off the plane from Mexico. Now I'm thinking high as a kite. I'm thinking she has to be high right now or something.
This sounds like wine munchies.
Maybe. There was no booze there, though. That's the thing that got me. But there's at least $150 worth of food there for one night.
And it's all, yeah, it's all perishable, like one night food.
Yes, it's all perishable.
Stuff you can store for later.
Well, here's the kicker. She's going to pay for it. She looks at the cashier and goes, I just want to make sure that that was $13.20 or whatever it was. So then she looks and goes, no, this is $20. She goes, never mind. And I just almost went, what the F are you doing? Because like she's making dopey jokes at me when I mention that, because she starts to laugh halfway through putting her food up there. And she goes, yeah, it's in case I need some cheese tonight. I don't really want to cut cheese. Well, at least not in that way. And you're just like, what is happening? I'm in the middle of a bit with a crazy woman, I think. And she doesn't want to, she has $100 worth of food, $150 worth of food, including Carvel, in which we're also making fun of the, oh, well, there's no cookie puss available, I guess. She goes, no, nor Fudgy the Whale either. And I'm like, lady, you're on my wavelength. I'm kind of digging you right now. But she goes, no, the $8 extra for the cheese platter, bridge too far for me. I'm just going to take my crab legs, my lobster, my Carvel ice cream cake, and go.
I mean, nothing sits better with crab legs and lobster than a dairy product, if you ask me.
Just it was random food too. It's just like she just went to like the fresh food section and just started grabbing stuff. I almost asked, pardon me, are you high right now, or are you planning on driving yourself home? But usually you can tell that this woman looked fairly normal.
It's always the normal one talking.
Well, but I mean, you got to admit the randomness of going out and grabbing one of those cheese cracker platters. You're like, I may never have this opportunity again to ask, what were you thinking right now?
It's just weird to buy a cheese cracker platter and not be doing a party, especially with those other things. Yes. That's still weird.
I saw the cake and the lime and the fresh fruit. I'm like, oh, it's for a spread. They're going to have a party. They're going to have drinks or whatever, even though it's like 10 o'clock on a Thursday. Sure, why not? But no, I just got off a plane. Might need a snack later. That's all. Anyways, how are you?
I'm all right, Hawkins. I have discovered that I've got like a bit of a sleeping thing going on here, so I'm a little tired. But I think
need to be more sleep apnea.
Everybody sleeps. Well, yeah, no. My thing is that I'm not getting, despite how much sleep I'm getting, I'm not actually getting very good sleep, and I think we're starting to figure out it may be a case of sleep apnea, but. You know, it better to have like a sense of what might be wrong than to not. And it certainly explains some of the tired feelings I've been feeling for the last month or so here.
Last time I got good sleep was 1996, I think. I'm almost serious about that. I just haven't slept ever. Well, yes. So if you have any sleep apnea tricks at DWATG, slip into the DMs, tell them your hints for getting good sleep. He'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Specifically if they apply to sleep apnea. Don't tell me like pop on like Joy of Painting or something like that.
Just rub one out. Not the cure for
it. Yeah. Sleep apnea gone.
Yeah. Going into the news this week, big news coming out of AEW. Tony Khan's big surprise for this week announced on the 420 Dynamite show. It's a new pay-per-view show called Forbidden Door, a joint show with New Japan Pro Wrestling. The show was announced for June 23rd at the United Center in Chicago. This is Dave Meltzer and The Observer talking. One would suspect the goal would be a second $1 million gate in company history after doing so for Double or Nothing on May 29th in Las Vegas. I know a lot of hardcore fans of AEW this is a fly-in show for them. I am cautious about this one, Chris, and I'll tell you why. New Japan of America, and look, there's been the Twitter debate was about casual fans. And I'm like, casual fans don't even watch AEW. All right. Casual fans are the type who go, what's going on for Mania or the Rumble? Oh, this big star I knew came back, or my favorite has come out of retirement. Those are casual fans for the most part. New Japan of America is still a touring brand. And we've had a lot of New Japan guys already in AEW. We've had, you know, if you count them, the Good Brothers, although they're not with New Japan right now, they probably will be soon enough. We've had Kenta. We've had Tomohiro Ishii. We've had Yuji Nagata. I mean, we've had guys of that caliber on there, but we haven't.
Yeah, the
had...
New Japan member berries crew, as yeah, I like to think of them.
Yeah, the guys who come over to America for the tours is my point. What people are expecting right now, I think, and I think what people want is they want kind of like, in better terms, you remember the WCW New Japan Super Shows of the mid-90s? Or maybe
sure.
They want the matchup between they don't want like team ups and things like that, like six man tags, like they were doing in the Las Vegas shows when they were doing things like that. They want their favorites versus New Japan favorites. And I think really it's going to be a disappointment for people unless they get two or three of the four of the following. Let's put it that way. Kota Ibushi, Okada, Naito, and Tanahashi. Anything else, I think, would be considered a failure, don't you?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, and it seems fairly certain that they'll get Ibushi, but
no, Ibushi's injured right now. That's the thing that's keeping him from it.
Okay, if he was available.
And I think they might be saving him for when Omega comes back, because I don't think Omega can make this card. And that's the other thing I think people are hoping for is like, oh, this will be when Omega comes back. I go, I thought he had surgery, but don't quote me on that necessarily. Now,
this could be a worth seeing show if this is the launch of a major New Japan versus AEW angle. So we could be sleeping on that front.
Well, judging from how they hyped it on Dynamite, though, it looks to be a lot of Bullet Club type of drama with Jay White. And I think you're going to get a lot of that kind of level of guy of Jay White. That's no, well, Jay White's a former IWGP champion. Okay, sure. But he's been an Impact for the past few months. You might get the Gorillas of Destiny. You might even get Zack Sabre Jr. and Taguchi and those levels. I mean, you might get Will Ospreay in here because I mean, all those guys were working Windy City Riot already. To help out with that thing, but that was also kind of an AEW crossover card. But I think when you say New Japan, they don't want the gaijins. They want the legendary, the ones who were when New Japan was hot about 5 or 6 years ago when it was at its apex.
The member berries crew, like they want Naito and they want Okada.
They want the work rate guys. They want the 5-star matches. They don't want New Japan strong guys. No offense to Tom Lawler or anything like that. They, you know, Fred Rosser, hell of a working thing. And I also think they don't want, ooh, we're going to have an 8-man tag featuring the members of Chaos versus the members of this. I think they want the full, I think they want the war, Chris. I do.
Yeah. I think given the current state of New Japan's roster, it's not to say that they're like untalented or whatever, but they just simply don't have the, you know, Murderers Row, New York Yankees sort of lineup that they had in the last decade, like 10 years ago. It's not the same lineup anymore. The guys who were the, you know, the top of the card from back then are now the member berries crew. And they used to have a bunch of aging legends who still could turn in, you know, good matches here and there. They were a much deeper roster with a clear sort of eye to the future that they don't have right now.
Guys that are in the future, but it's hit and miss quite a bit.
But I'm saying like right now they're still depending on Okada and they don't have that next Okada guy.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not saying like Okada's past his prime or whatever either. I'm just saying that next man up thing doesn't seem as clear right now. And even if they're kind of getting someone ready for the IWGP level, like, you need to have that next man up vibe across, like, all these different divisions.
Yeah, remember, these are two promotions working with each other. So it's going to be one of those things where it's not going to be just, you know, Bryan Danielson and CM Punk going over on guys either. other guys are going to have to win. And that could get difficult. This could be a bloated card is another fear I have, because they're going to want to get everybody onto this thing between, because, you know, Eddie Kingston's going to probably get he's probably going to get Ishii to do a match. Because he wants to do a strong style match with a Japanese guy. I'm wondering if there might even be some Stardom things, given New Japan and Stardom thing, because that's another complaint you're going to hear, is that where are the women if it's just a pure New Japan card? And, you know, not everybody has to get a trophy here. I think that would be a mistake. I think you'd like to have about 8 matches. Hopefully they go tight, but man, I can just see them putting the Young Bucks on this card and that going over 10 minutes. And then everybody wants to get their thing in, and this becomes a 6-hour card for some reason. It's intriguing, let's put it that way, but it's not something where I immediately want to buy a plane ticket, because I would kind of like to see the card first, but I understand the urge to do it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. If I had more confidence in Khan's booking right now, I think I would be more of a maybe on going to see this show, because it would be cool to see like New Japan again. It's been a while, but I don't necessarily have faith in Khan when it comes to the week-to-week booking right now. So I could just see this being sort of a throwaway super show.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fair enough. We will see. I have confidence. He books the big cards well, but you are right about the week to week. I do have some doubts about that, and whether or not this gets built up to be a hot show remains to be seen as well, especially in the time from Memorial Day to the card. They have that kind of, they have 3 weeks, I think 4 weeks there to do it between Vegas and this. So, you know, we'll
it
see.
It makes you think story wise, it may be a small potato show.
Yeah. Also kind of interesting to me, at least, Wrestling Observer reported that Bret Hart has quietly signed a lucrative deal with WWE that prevents him from working with AEW, but allows him to take various independent bookings. Now, those of you who follow me on Twitter know that I heavily retweeted the fact that Bret Hart will be seconding FTR at a match in Big Time Wrestling. And I believe that's, I forgot what state that's in, but this tears at me a little bit, Chris, and I'll tell you why. I am the guy who wakes up every morning. I tweet this: good morning, get paid. Bret Hart signing for a lot of money with WWE makes a lot of sense in many ways. And I assume he may have probably even leveraged both working with FTR and AEW at some point, and also being there for the finals of the tournament named after his brother's foundation, to get a bigger contract, bigger Legends contract with WWE. Now, we watched Wrestling with Shadows for an episode of Shake Them Ropes during the pandemic era. We know that Bret had a lot of issues with Vince McMahon, and I know that money cures a lot of things. But at the same time, you know, there is such a thing as principle. And I don't know if wrestlers necessarily ever have it or not, but you'd always feel like Bret Hart being mad at WWE and upset about that, or at least wanting to honor his brother's legacy, you would think that maybe there wasn't a price on that necessarily that you could pay, but I guess not.
I mean, it's interesting. It's certainly an interesting debate, given the shakiness of Hart's health through the years. How many more opportunities like this will Hart see? If you have an issue with like strokes and that sort of thing, a recurrence of a stroke can be quite sudden. You know, I don't need to give everyone how strokes work a lesson on that, but I can't blame him for getting paid either. Yeah. And trying to, you know, bleed out McMahon for money and essentially leverage, I don't want you on AEW to get millions of dollars. Like, getting paid to not do something is one heck of a trick if you can pull it off.
Yeah. No, that's what I was thinking too. It's just one of those things where it's like,
and as a retired person, getting paid to not do something has a lot of appeal.
Yeah, I mean, I've you know, my dream is to be bought out someday. You know, get paid a lot of money to come do something, and then they decide we don't want it, whatever you do anymore. We'll pay you pennies on the dollar to not do it. That's the dream, baby. I get it. It just felt a little dirty reading it at first because you're just like, man. Everything would tell you that Bret Hart would want to be a part of that Owen tournament type of thing, especially to give the trophy there. And, you know, FTR loved the guy. In fact, Fightful, we don't necessarily report on rumors, but Fightful this week reported that there was some interest in bringing back FTR to WWE. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's, you know, get paid. It's get paid. You know what? If they offer Hart to second them in WWE and they reach a number, I could see that happening.
Like that, or they get to get lumped in with Cody and like those guys kind of end up getting to be like a horseman like faction or something. That could be very cool.
Yeah. But we'll see. Speaking of talents comings and goings, Kushida's contract ran out with WWE. He is free to go where he wants. I think he ends up on that New Japan show in Chicago, to be
honest
with
you. This is really ridiculous, Jeff. I got to stop you. Once again, we're not going to get a payoff to a Von Wagner storyline.
Well, you know, would we want a payoff to a Von Wagner storyline at this point? Well, Aikman Jiro and his coat of many colors is still there. We can go biblical.
I hope someone asks him about his tag team partner and Jiro just says he forgot. Like, no recollection.
Wesley this week? That interview was interesting. They're asking, oh, man, I'm having such a hard time right now. And he can't mention his tag partner because they fired him.
But like they can't, but they do, but they don't. It's the weirdest way that Vic, Wade, and Wesley had to do this bizarre dance around the other guy, the annoying one. From
now let Ikem and Jiro do that in when English is his second language.
It would be so great to have him do the interview where it's like, Ikem and Jiro, last week you started going through some really hard times. Talk a little bit about that. What's going on inside your mind right now? And then Jiro answers whatever he answers.
Yeah. Also gone, but from AEW, Jack Evans, as of the end of the month, his contract will not be renewed. Took it very well on Twitter, but I am here to tell you that I am angry, Chris Novembrino, because I said when they signed this guy, give him a microphone and he will be the number two heel in your company quickly. When the pandemic hit and crowds were not there, I was saying, give Jack Evans a microphone, for God's sake. They never gave him the microphone. They never got his gift of gab that much on TV. I, for one, find this to be a blown opportunity.
I completely agree. You look at who is currently the AEW champion, Adam Page, and Jack Evans is a perfect feud for Adam Page, especially if Evans gets on the microphone and starts talking about how he's the better athlete, how he's the better this, he's the better that. And you can essentially tell the story that maybe some of that's true, but Evans essentially can't get out of his own way. And that's how Paige is able to beat him. It would be a great short-term feud in a world title program. Number two heel is, I think, completely correct. He's a guy who is just great at being grating on the microphone. Almost like an interesting comp is sort of like Zach Gibson. It's like Evans can get on the microphone and go heel pretty darn fast.
Speaking of Zach Gibson, you've been watching any of the product or the rumors on the Twitterverse. You've now seen LA Knight runs a modeling agency on the main roster with Mace as his client. Drew Gulak is now an interview robot / intern with management. The tag team of Zach Gibson and James Drake, the Grizzled Young Veterans, have had the Grizzled Young Veterans name drop because they used it previously on independent promotions and have also lost their first names. They are now just known as Gibson and Drake. Also, other talent rebrandings. It looks like Kaylee Ray's new name in the promotion will be Alba Fire, and Casey Catanzaro from American Ninja Warrior, who had some celebrity to her when she was signed, will now be known as Katana Chase or Katana Chance. I don't even know if the Grizzled Young Veterans are coming back, because it looked like after Gibson and Drake dropped their tag match, it looked like they might either be on their way back to NXT UK, or they might just be getting dropped altogether. I don't know. But it brings up a question I've had and an argument I had last week with my co-host from the Dynamite show over at Fight Game Media. We come out every Wednesdays, patreon.com/fightgamemedia. I go, what is the, I don't mind them training people and going, putting green guys on television. I don't. I don't mind watching that process sometimes on a professional wrestling television show. But what is the point of this NXT 2.0 if you are selling them as the next generation of WWE superstars and you're telling the hardcore guys, come watch these people grow, watch these people develop, watch these characters, get emotionally invested in these characters. And then when they come to the main roster, you turn Pete Dunne into an angry shoeshine boy. After watching this week's NXT, I find that entire show to be a waste of time, Chris.
No, I completely agree. And turning Pete Dunne, who was presented as a killer.
Oh, and let me state this. Pete okay. Dunne is doing a great job with the character he's been given.
Yeah, okay. that's not the issue. The character
exactly.
sucks.
Yes.
Yeah, and what the character says about Pete Dunne, the NXT character, is sort of an indictment of the entire brand. This is a guy who was like a killer with a reputation on NXT, and you literally could have invested years in watching this guy really grow and develop into a main event act, which is what he did down in NXT and NXT UK. And that's all just completely erased. The growth and development arc of Pete Dunne, the wrestler, doesn't matter. All that matters is Butch, who has no past. He's just a guy who wears a hat.
Yeah, and Harry, I like Butch. It's like, that's not really, again, it's the one name thing, and you're just like, what?
And here he is, your world champion, Butch.
Gibson and Drake. It's like, okay.
At least Gibson and Drake, given the way WWE manages tag teams, it doesn't actually really preclude them from being any more than what they currently are. But no. but it is always the mark of decline when you get pulled down to one name.
Pretty much.
Has there been a success story yet with a one-namer?
I know there is one, but I just...
Well, obviously, Bill Goldberg becoming Goldberg. But
Goldberg,
like, I'm trying to think of like in the last... Last 10 years.
Oh,
last 10 years.
10 years.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Like, not Cesaro.
Riddle? Does he count?
Riddle might be an arguable case.
Okay. Ricochet, maybe? I don't know.
Ricochet?
Are they going to change his name now? Could they use that on the indies? I mean, that's the other thing, is they're changing these names midstream, mid-television.
Ooh,
product.
He could be... Ba-dum! Like, that could be his name.
Swahili. What are you doing, Chris? No, but I mean, that's the other thing, is they're changing these names mid-TV. It's like if Tony Soprano came on screen now my name's Bob Smith. Everybody will address me as Bob Smith now. And it's like the Smiths, you know, woke up this morning, all this stuff. And you're like, oh, what the hell happened to Tony Soprano? Nope, now he's Bob Smith. it's just stupid. It's stupid for a television product to do that, because the whole point of television is to train your audience.
It continues to beg the question, who is NXT 2.04? I just don't know.
Oh, there will be more beatings about NXT 2.0 later, and maybe one bright shining light in Roxanne. But other than that, we'll talk about that during the Lazy River. More news now. The Cavender twins, who signed with WWE on an NIL deal, they play basketball at Fresno State, have announced that they are transferring to the University of Miami, which is fascinating, given the fact that they make so much in social media, if you're into blondes, check them out. I'm not, but you know, some people are. But my University of Miami in Florida is just a puddle jumper away from the Orlando Training Center. I think they are headed to WWE after their time is over. Might as well cash in on that celebrity.
Yeah, WWE is a good place for a twins act to generally kind of have some success. I'm sure the Cavenders have looked at like the Bella Twins model and said, we could probably do that. And they probably can.
Yeah, they probably can. I mean, they are fairly popular on the old TikTok there. Ivy Nile, Chad Gable's brother, whose working name I forgot and I didn't write down, and Lash Legend going to do a little bit of time over at NXT UK. Chris, how excited are you for Lash Legend versus Isla Dawn?
I think the Lash Isla feud's actually going to be yield us some really good promos, like Isla coming out and, you know, scaring Lash Legend and stuff, and Lash having to act like that means something to her.
What we're going to have? We're going to have Lash Legend versus your girl, the one with the talk show.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. So Lash is totally going to be presented as a face over there.
We're going to have a talk show feud over there.
Nina Samuels.
Nina Samuels, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I'm kind of here. Look, I'm kind of here for Ivy Nile versus Mako, if I can get it.
Yeah. Ivy actually could, you know, have some sneaky good matches over
that,
there.
That might be fun. Also kind of here for Chad Gable's brother, kind of doing some like Steiner brother type work with the boys in Gallus. I think that'd be kind of fun too. So we'll see what they do with them over there. Might just be training, might just be, you know, eat a couple pins for some people, but might be fun nevertheless. Darius Martin of Top Flight, sidelined with an injury again per Fightful today, came out during Rampage on Twitter and said it's a non-wrestling injury, which Fightful never reported it was a wrestling injury, but it looks like Top Flight's gonna be on the shelf for a little while again.
Well, that's unfortunate, but Darius Martin also seemed to be losing steam with his singles run.
Oh, I don't know. That six-man match, you telling me he didn't look good in that?
Yeah, it was a pretty competitive outing against the Blackpool Combat Club. Anyone could have won.
Yeah. Virgil, a.k.a. Mike Jones, 59, alumni of the University of Virginia, Jeff Hawkins alum, said he has suffered two strokes and has the beginnings of dementia. That's something I'd never want anybody to go through, so keep him in your prayers, kids. And then finally, in our news segment, another lighthearted note. Well, no, this one's actually lighthearted. Killer Cross, Kevin Kesar, 36, and longtime girlfriend Scarlett Bordeaux, a.k.a. Elizabeth Chahaya, I believe is how you say that name, were married on April 20th on a glacier in Alaska in a private ceremony. Chris, do you want to get married on a glacier?
Glacier is coming. That's what they put on the invitations.
That's not a destination wedding, I don't think. Go ahead.
I mean, how many people choose a glacier to go to as a destination?
Exactly. Yeah, you know, the guests are freezing. Global warming, it might melt mid-ceremony, depending on how long the vows are. Yeah, you know.
I mean, look, if it's a ceremony just for you and her, and you guys really want to do that, that's one thing. I think, as you mentioned, asking a lot of people to take that trek is pretty brutal. Like, my dad just had like knee replacement surgery and may need some stuff here for his arm and back. I couldn't imagine him having to actually go out to Alaska.
Ratings, as you might imagine, down across the board. The Friday Rampage running at earlier slot had low turnout despite the star power on that. Rest of the week, NBA playoffs dominated the week, so everything was lower in viewership and demos. So there's no reason to talk about
nothing worth talking about. I mean, you just expect them to be down across the board.
Well, Chris, I think you have something you'd like to talk about now.
I do have something I'd like to talk about, Jeff. Today's show is sponsored by HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Get farm fresh seasonal produce and easy to make recipes delivered right to your door every week. Ingredients travel from the farm to your doorstep in under a week, so they always arrive fresh. All without the trip to the grocery store or to the farmer's market. It's all about convenience with HelloFresh. Not only do the ingredients come pre-portioned, so you're not overbuying or wasting food, but it's easier than ever to get filling meals on the table in a snap with options like family-friendly and quick and easy recipes. HelloFresh's chefs really know how to diversify the menu with seasonal recipes like salmon limon and pasta primavera. That's a springtime recipe, Hawkins. Primavera. That's it's Italian for spring.
Is it? What's in primavera?
It's vegetables and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it'd be good. You should get the recipe.
I don't like salmon, so I was wondering what.
Pasta primavera would be different than salmon limon. Salmon limon would be one dish that's like a limey. It's a salmon sort of dish, Hawkins. It's fish. Yeah, it's a fish dish. Whereas pasta primavera is it's spring. It's Italian spring pasta.
Gotcha.
There you go. That's not right at all. But if you want to get the offer, you can go to HelloFresh.com/VOW16 and use code VOW16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. That is HelloFresh.com/VOW16. Hawkins says it's VOW16. Not sure why. HelloFresh.com/VOW16. Use code VOW16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. HelloFresh. America's number one meal kit.
Thank you, Chris. And with that, we open up the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Anything we've watched, anything we're thinking about, anything about wrestling in general, maybe even not wrestling occasionally. It's what we're going to talk about right now. Show to show, bounce around, things we liked, things we hated. Chris, I will start. Chris, who do you think my favorite wrestler this week was? And it's somebody that it has nothing to do with a match. And it's somebody that we don't talk about that often.
I don't know, Hawkins. Those are terrible clues.
That's a very terrible clue. My favorite wrestler this week was Ethan Page.
Okay.
I'll tell you why. That promo he cut was absolute money. It was fire. It was hate. It was he wanted to beat the crap out of Sammy Guevara. And we don't have enough hate in our wrestling promos and feuds anymore. And that's what makes wrestling good. It's what makes matches good. When I was on here and ranting and raving about Briscoe's FTR, I was for weeks. It was about the promos and then the match itself delivered on the same kind of hate they were delivering in the promos. There's none of that anymore. There's no, because WWE is afraid for their baby faces to get angry at any point, unless you're the main event monster babyface like Drew McIntyre, can occasionally go smash things and things like that. But every other babyface is like, well, titles come and titles go. C'est la vie. You know, that John Cena promo, which just drove me up the wall that one time when he lost the belt. He goes, oh, well, guess I'll get another title shot down the road. Hate it. Hate it. And you picked up on something Monday about anger that I loved. Go ahead.
Well, before we get into that, I want to talk a little bit about the Ethan Page promo. I continue to find myself baffled that Dan Lambert is the vehicle for people turning babyface. And I think that it speaks to grander problems with the booking of this company that time and again, Dan Lambert is somewhat of a vortex where a babyface casted character enters into and ends up being a heel on the back end of it, despite the fact that Lambert and his crew don't ever actually really turn babyface. I guess no. It's sort of happening now.
Well,
sort of.
Here's
maybe.
The thing is number one, Dan Lambert just speaks the truth that we're all thinking. That's the problem here.
Yeah, and there's nothing really to go after Lambert about. He's goofy, but like he's never does anything that really makes him a hypocrite.
No, he doesn't. He's pure troll, but at the same time, there's a hint of truth in the trolling. And yes, it's tinged with some misogyny in there.
Oh, no, it has like all the trappings of like being a boomer. And this is, again, why I find myself utterly perplexed by characters somehow ending up in a head-to-head against the boomer, almost like Cornette parody character.
Yes.
And then ending up heel, like, you know, Sammy, but like Cody before, and Sammy Guevara is now sort of turning into Cody Rhodes.
Brandy,
which is, Sammy and Tay are sort of turning into Cody and Brandy Mock too.
Yes, and they even referenced that on the promo. It's like, you know, the most despicable couple at AEW is still here.
It's fascinating stuff. Now to get into my point, we are watching Raw here this week, and I forget which match Lawler even said. Oh no, it's the Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan match, right?
Yes.
Now Liv Morgan and Rhea come up short in their title challenge here. Not totally surprising. Rhea Ripley probably joining this Edge faction, but at the end of the match, Ripley turns on Liv, and like the blocking of that was quite terrible. And Liv ends up getting blindsided by Rhea Ripley, and Rhea Ripley beats the crap out of Liv Morgan. And as Rhea Ripley's leaving the ring, Jerry Lawler goes, "Well, Rhea's really upset about losing, and who could blame her?" And it made me think about this idea and this broader problem with booking patterns in both companies. It's not really just a WWE problem, that baby faces really never show that they care when they lose. Or it's much more infrequent insofar as that there are pathways to show that you care when you lose. They tend to result in you turning heel. It's like a baby face can't stand losing, like Rhea Ripley, and finally has a manifestation of that I can't stand losing thing, and that's what drives them to turn heel. Whereas a baby face very rarely in this company, and WWE is a great example on this, you know, has a loss and it becomes defining, galvanizing, and, you know, redemptive. You could possibly be yelling at your iPhone or whatever you're listening to this on right now. Well, what about Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch? Well, yeah, was that, or was that sort of a thing that they kind of like needed to kind of do a get right on because they had Becky bump off Bianca, you know, 23 seconds, and did Bianca winning at WrestleMania completely undo the 23-second loss?
No, so, because she never got over on her on the promos either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, if she had beaten her in like 22 seconds or whatever it was, yeah, sure, you got over on her and you had her on the promos. But and what we were saying that the build to that match was terrible because Becky just sucks all the oxygen out of the room because she has so much personality and her heel persona is so overpowering that you can't get over it. But I mean,
you essentially needed that to be like Bianca Mania, like Daniel Bryan's Yes-O-Mania.
Bianca to be mad at Becky. You needed Bianca to be ready to fight Becky. And it's like, girl, no, you know, that kind of that offstanding, you know, just kind of dismissive stuff. And there's nothing wrong with intense baby faces. I mean, look, I'm going to go back in the Wayback Machine, but if you decide to ever watch old wrestling, there's a lot of intense baby faces out there, even if they don't always win. And they're not necessarily angry. They're just intense. Like, you know, Magnum TA always kind of gave an intense promo to let you know he was serious about getting there in the fight and getting the win. And there was never anything wrong with that. It never made you think, man, Magnum's turning heel next week. No, he's here to win. He's here to make money. He's here to beat up the Horsemen. And we don't get that anymore because everybody's so happy to be part of the WWE universe or part of AEW. And it's all that these shows exist to show you the world of wrestling kind of thing with the backstage politics and machinations. It's like everything's 30 Rock, but set in a wrestling show type of thing where you never get the fact that you never get to lose the veneer that you're watching a wrestle. I mean, you know what I mean, that you're
no, you're watching a show about wrestling
show, yes,
rather than watching a wrestling league.
Yes. You never get to drop that thing that's like you're not in the world. You're just kind of watching it from afar type thing. Yeah.
It's kind of like the Muppets, right?
Yes,
like,
the Muppet Show. Yeah.
It's like the Muppet Show
analogy before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want a promotion to, it's something I don't ever want backstage interviews, but I want backstage interviews within the confines and the trappings of what you'd expect in a sports promotion. And I think when we drift away from that with like skits and bits and stuff that's spooky ooky and that sort of thing, that's the price you're sort of paying for. You start slowly kind of drifting into Muppet Show territory.
Yeah, I mean,
about wrestling.
The vignettes that were always cool to me were the ones where it's like, you know, Arn Anderson and Eric Watts end up running into each other at a gas station and they start fighting. You know, the Horsemen follow Dusty into a parking lot and end up breaking his arm. You know, those types of vignettes aren't bad. And it shows you that the world of wrestling continues even after the cameras are off after the 2-hour show. And no wrestling show does that anymore, because it's like everything only happens during the office hours that the wrestling promotion is running in front of the camera.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Yeah, and then like WWE with their current backstage intrigue, like, does anyone really care about Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce?
No!
Yeah, I mean, it's just silly. Silly.
Although they did bring back the PowerPoint for Drew this week, so I was happy about that. your turn on the Lazy River, sir.
All right, well, let's stop beating around the bush, Hawkins. We need to talk about the main event here, and that is the main event of Rampage, which featured my number one talent. I would say greatest wrestler of 2022, Jade Cargill.
Come on.
No, once again, she hit it out of the park here this week, Hawkins. Before I got on the air here today, I was doing some cleaning, and I had these guys on who were going through various Steven Seagal movies, and in particular, looking at the later era ones. There's one where Seagal's dialogue is so bad, Hawkins, that they actually dub most of it in post-production. That's pretty glorious. But they're watching one in particular, and it's not horrible or whatever by late era Seagal standards. Like, he actually does a few bumps, or he does a few stunts or whatever. But one guy comments to the other guy, the problem with Seagal is that Seagal doesn't realize what makes an action movie good, which is that the strong person has to be in peril, that the hero, the badass has to be in peril in order to really kind of sell to the audience how badass the main person is. And Seagal's version of these sorts of movies is the badass person is so badass that they just come in and annihilate everyone, and everyone sort of explodes upon one punch. And that is what watching a Jade Cargill match is. She doesn't know how to sell. She doesn't understand the merits of selling. And this Marina Shafir match was bad from front to back. You're building Shafir for weeks as an MMA killer a la Ronda Rousey or a la the Queen of Spades, Shayna Baszler. And at the beginning of the match, Cargill puts both of her arms behind her back, gives a big, beaming, toothy smile. Mm-hmm. And Marina Shafir winds up and misses because Cargill is able to evade Marina Shafir. The match was already over at that point. At that point, you have completely destroyed the entire build to Marina Shafir, because what Marina Shafir 100% absolutely should be able to do to Jade Cargill in that situation is punish her, and punish her badly. Not necessarily with a strike to the face, but just kick her directly in the gut and level her and put her on the floor. And then Cargill has to take a bunch of strikes because Cargill was arrogant and has been taking this whole thing very lightly and triflingly the whole way down. Couldn't even say Marina Shafir's name correctly.
This is the point where she goes, oh my God, I'm in deep water right now.
I'm in deep water. The 30 is not going to be like the other 29. Because then that makes 30 actually mean something. Instead, for the rest of the match, Shafir is basically constantly on the defensive to Jade Cargill, constantly having to sell to Jade Cargill. Mm-hmm. And the match is clunky, and that's being generous given the open of this match, before the commercial break. But where it really actually starts circling down the drain is during the commercial break. I don't even normally notice picture-in-picture stuff, but I'm watching this rest hold, and watching Jade Cargill work this rest hold is like watching my cat Shadow trying to work the doorknob to the front door. Like, if you give him enough time and a little bit of help, he can get that door open. He's a smart boy. I'm proud of him. Love that cat. But Jade Cargill, kind of expecting a little bit more proficiency with a rest hold. Marina Shafir makes her way back up. Cargill starts doing strikes off of that. The timing is horrible. And then we get to the end of the match here, where Shafir puts on the heel hook. Cargill's not really selling this. Like, there's no real sense that Cargill's in any peril. And then Cargill starts doing the kicks, and the kicks are even dangerous because she's kicking Shafir directly in the head. She's missing the shoulder. This match stunk, Hawkins. Jade Cargill is not good. Might she be good someday? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Give her enough time. Sure, why not? I've seen it happen. People grow. I'm in that business. But she's not good right now, and she doesn't deserve this push that she's been on. And I was finding myself wishing at the end of this match that there's a way for both of them to lose.
I'm gonna go back to my rant about NXT for my point here, because I have nothing to add to your point, because it's well made. Chris, I haven't watched NXT front to back in a few weeks, admittedly. I've waited for the show to run, and then people tell me what's good, and I kind of fast forward through what's bad. But I got a chance to watch it live this week. What have they done to Joe Gacy as a character here? Where he was originally that avatar for, let's be generous and or maybe honest or whatever.
No, he was like millennial motivational speaker.
He was the right wing answer to people who just hate woke corporate culture type of thing. Let's put it that way. When did he get magic in his repertoire? When did he become the supernatural guy? / Bray Wyatt type.
They decided he was irreverent, but he's never been irreverent. He's just been a guy who's like a really crappy motivational speaker who, yeah, like plays upon, like, you know, what a right winger thinks quote unquote woke culture is. Like, so, but now he has like spooky ookie powers because Harlan's kind of spooky and he's dressed like a priest, sort of.
Sarai has lost her powers all of a sudden too. Also apparently has lost the ability to win. I mean, the Tiffany Stratton match wasn't bad. It wasn't good, but it wasn't bad. But Sarai is just a geek now. Look, Del Fantasma, you're watching them and you're watching this thing with Italians and you're thinking it's the return of the Vince Russo gang war era. The character interactions here are a mess. And I like a lot of the people on this show. But, I mean, Braun Breaker's supposed to be your big breakout newcomer star. And they've turned him into an idiot. And you're just watching this going, as a sentient human being who actually enjoys some quality television, what am I doing wasting these 2 hours of my life just because I like wrestling? And I'm flummoxed by when they took this over and they said they're going to make it more seamless between NXT 2.0 and the main roster. And what they've done is they've just basically gone through the book of ex-WWE gimmicks and decided to throw a crap load in there, man. I watched this show and I'm like, I like these guys. I like these guys. I like these guys. Don't like these guys. I don't like these guys. I don't like these guys. But this show is such a tough watch right now for me.
I don't know what's really to enjoy in terms of a division with a program. I guess it would, even Carmelo Hayes. I like Carmelo Hayes.
Yes.
Trick Anthony, I don't feel like is adding anything to this act. He's just there. I feel like Carmelo could do all of this completely on his own at this point.
We broke up the Waller team, it looks like, way too quickly. We're breaking up all these teams again and shuffling them around because they don't like tag teams, et cetera, et cetera. I think Waller's guy is going up to team with Veer for some reason, but you know, it's just, let's have some continuity. I mean, yeah, you get Natty down on the main roster and down in NXT, and she at least looks like she's having fun doing what she's doing right now. But let's keep the continuity there and give you reasons why she's down there and reasons why people show up on the main roster from NXT. And then you have fans who are watching one because you have 4 or 5 times as many fans who watch Raw and 3 times as many people who watch SmackDown as watch NXT go, well, maybe I'll go over there and see the continuation of this storyline that is long-term and well-written and these other things. And instead we get, you know, it's just ridiculous.
I think the only bright spot on NXT this week, and it's just like a small one, is the person that Natty had the enhancement match against, Paxton Saxley or whatever. I don't know what her name is.
It's some bizarre name. You're close.
Yeah, right. She's shown some promise in a number of different outings. I thought she had another one that looked like decent. You know, she in an era where a number of these developmental talents don't necessarily look like they'll develop, she certainly looks like she will.
I'm sorry, not to be negative on her, but just the Nikita Lyons interaction, where Nikita's delivery of that promo where she clears her throat and goes into it. I was dead. I'm like, this is, why don't we do a second take here, guys? We can tape these things for the new guys instead of taping it live. It feels so amateur hour, and not in a good way. Like, studio wrestling has that amateur hour feel at times, and there are bad promos that come out there, but they at least had the decency to do retakes here and there.
Yeah, and those guys who had bad promos still worked competent matches. It was like, not that they were bad in the ring and bad on the mic simultaneously.
Now, allow me to do another quick thing here before I give you a... Actually, no, you go ahead. Take a turn here. Sorry.
Okay. I guess then let me look at what happened on Dynamite here. Oh, a nice little spot of wrestling here this week was Dustin Rhodes versus CM Punk.
Yeah,
I enjoyed this match a lot. Just a nice, solid little match.
Nice tribute to Bret Hart versus Goldust, which, you know, everybody's giving the love to Bret Hart in AEW. He decides, hey, I'm going to take the money. Still a little sore about that, Chris.
Let me do one more quickie. Because that was a positive one. It was just I liked that, and sometimes those are short.
Feel free.
One that I thought was kind of a dumper and surprised me with like how much it underperformed was Jungle Boy versus O'Reilly. O'Reilly looked not in best form, and I didn't think this made Jungle Boy look very... I mean, O'Reilly won the match. I'm not saying the presentation of him wasn't strong or whatever. I'm just saying like he didn't look very sharp, and I kind of expected this match to be more than what it ended up being.
There was no heat to this match. In terms of the interactions between, they're having a feud between Red Dragon and Jurassic Express, and these guys are just doing a nice little choreographed wrestling match instead of you feeling like Kyle O'Reilly should kind of be trying to break an arm or break a leg here, you would think.
Yeah, you almost would view O'Reilly's goal as different in this match. Like, he's trying to hurt yes. Jack Perry. Jack Perry's trying to win. So, like, Perry wins the match, but O'Reilly has hurt him. And so they both sort of achieve what they want. Having O'Reilly win, I guess, is booking against the grain in that. But that one has to question, okay, but why?
I would think you'd want one of your pillars in this tournament. And I would think Jungle Boy would be the guy versus, say, Darby or Sammy or MJF.
Yes. Yeah. Especially Jungle seems like the best candidate too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It floored me, to be honest. Now I'm looking forward to the match Wednesday. I'm here for the FTR versus FTR thing. I think it'll be fun. I think they're gonna over try a little bit. But
I think I'm gonna rewatch Brett versus Owen at WrestleMania 10 prior to this match and see how many spots pop up in this match. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Let me take a moment here to praise performances non-wrestling that I enjoyed this week. First of all, Smart Mark Sterling on Dynamite. Wardlow's hitting all the right notes as well, but I want especially the perfect sitcom timing of him reading the, oh, and I have a message for you. Eat takes the beat, turns directly to the camera, says the S word, takes the beat, turns back to Wardlow, pig. I howled at that. That was absolute perfection of television comedy right there. I dug that. And also, we had a wedding on Raw. Weddings, of course, are going to break down and whatnot. But I think one of the most underrated comedic performers in the WWE over the past couple of years, and I've brought this up a few times, is Tamina. Tamina has some of the best reactions to dumb things that you get.
She is really funny in
yes.
the doesn't say anything, just has reactions. And so she gets what that kind of comedy role is. And that's a subtle kind of nuanced role. She does it really well.
And if weddings hadn't been overdone in the past few years, I would have loved that 24/7. Title.
But let us talk about that wedding. That was where Raw truly, truly fell off the rails. And it was Raw was on a bad note right from the beginning of the show with the Cody Rhodes promo, because like he's just not connecting with the audience like that.
Are you really?
I think that he is every single time now. He tries to go one note too far and the audience doesn't go there with him.
All right.
He keeps overreaching a little bit. It's not gonna burn, hasn't burned him yet, but it happens. It happens like every single time he does the leap of faith and the crowd is not there to catch him. Right. But by the end of the show, I don't blame Rhodes, but we were clearly off to a bad start. And things kind of got steadily worse. At the point of this wedding, like, no one wanted to see this. Like this is a skit for no one, which is why they're doing all these what's to this. Nobody cares about Reggie. Nobody cares about Dana. Nobody cares about this title. No one cares about the pursuit for this title. Basically, pursuing this title makes you look like an idiot.
Yes.
And that's almost sort of the moral of the whole skit. Like, you're in love or whatever. You find true love, but this title like stupefies you so badly that you're even willing to pin your bride to try to get the title, or pin your husband to get the title.
If WWE had a bit of self-deprecation in them, and they don't, because the funny thing is they present stupid stuff, but they take themselves super seriously as a company. They would have gone hard into the name change thing and had somebody actually marry the 24/7 title and rename themselves like Dana 24/7.
I mean, that should be R-Truth, right? Like,
that should be, yes, it should be R-Truth 24/7.
He should name himself Mr. 24/7 because yes. he's married to the 24/7 title.
Yes, and then they can go on a honeymoon together. They can go dating. they can have
that know. Would also make every time he loses the title really funny, like she's cheating on him.
Yes. And then they have kids eventually, something like that. I don't know. But they're you know, you can take this to its most ridiculous conclusion because you're going into the ridiculousness.
But this is also like really should be a title for R-Truth. It should be a title that's it always has been. And so like really like they should just lean into this rather than Reggie and Dana Brooke, who I'm not saying like either one of them should be like world champion or anything like that, but like they're both better than this.
Your turn.
All right. What did you think of the coffin match between Darby Allin and Andrade El Elo?
I thought it felt rushed. That was my only thing, was it felt like rushed. It felt like it didn't get to the crescendo. It felt like there was a spot there where Andrade was trying to take off the top of the coffin so that he couldn't close it, but they decided it was chained too much. And also, I just thought Andrade should have won this feud, to be honest with you, because Darby doesn't need it.
Yeah, I agree with all of this. This just didn't click. It didn't have the intensity that a coffin match to me merited.
No, and it felt like a match with a coffin at ringside.
Right. A stipulation match, essentially. Like that Darby's like, you know, pet stipulation is a coffin match. Rather than a match to really settle the score or whatever. And the entire flow of the match lacked that sense of finality that I associate with a coffin match. You have a coffin match to end a feud once and for all, which means like all the stops are pulled out. And I don't know, like there was some of that. Sting pulling off a mask that is a Sting mask to reveal that it's Sting will forever get a pop out of me.
Yeah, same here, man. I love
it. It will never not be funny to me. Even if the like kind of the classic shine of like there was like an era where like, you know, you go to a wrestling show like in the 90s, of course, where everyone had a Sting mask on, so it really worked well, where Sting would really just sort of be like, where's Waldo, and like pop out and it's the real Sting. This worked pretty well though. I enjoyed that spot a lot. That was funny.
And I will never not pop for that crazy old man jumping off of a balcony like New Jack onto a bunch of people. It's still a dangerous spot to me.
He's just incredible. Yeah. He really is. It's crazy to think that this late era Sting chapter is just as important of a component of his Hall of Fame career as any of his sort of like prime era work. But like, he's just really set a new standard for what an advanced age performer can do in a wrestling ring. But I just didn't think this match delivered on any other level than that. The Hardys are boring, dude. I don't know. I guess maybe it's the sudden Matt turn. Like, maybe if they hadn't been on TV and they both sort of show back up and like Matt hadn't just been a heel for like months and months and months on end, this wouldn't feel as
and not only just a heel, a mid-card geek comedy heel for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks.
Right. Like, you didn't take the Andrade or the Hardy family office seriously at all, nor should you have. And so now that he's aligned with Jeff, it hasn't felt like a reset. It's felt like something that's kind of dragged Jeff down.
Yeah, the Hardy family office was Paul Jones' army. You know, that level of heel stable, as opposed to actually solidifying and making themselves a serious, formidable force in the company. They were always seen as kind of clowns from a circus. So you never really get to then invest in Matt as serious guy. You weren't emotionally connected.
I mean, Matt was originally running a Carney sort of act, right? Yes. I mean, he was literally saying, you know, like, you know, I'm going to, you know, take 30% or, you know, 50% or whatever. It was all about like taking obscene amounts of the money and, you know, conning all these guys. Yes. So all these guys were idiots.
Yes.
And Matt Hardy was taking advantage.
Big money Matt. It doesn't, they're not building the emotional resonance correctly. And speaking of which, let me get one more point about AEW before we go on to something else here quick. Tony Storm and Jamie Hayter have now been cutting promos with Tony Schiavone for 3 weeks, and they all suck. And it's killing Tony Storm's aura in any way. I don't know if she can't cut a promo, but she hasn't been able to on AEW yet, and they've all stunk. this feud stinks, and it's just and then it turns into comedy with the under the breath comments about, oh, she always leaves like that, stuff like that. It's killing her here. She came in pretty frigging, you know, as a big deal, and it's just it's killing her right now for the past couple of weeks. And speaking of bad promos, not enough is said about, except for me probably, these Undisputed Elite promos are bad for the act, especially. It's they need to take a step back to me and look in the camera and just say that as a unit they're gonna go kick people's butt. I'm tired of the, oh, he doesn't like you. Oh, he doesn't like you. Why is Kyle O'Reilly having to carry this promo as well? Because Cool Kyle is not a cool promo. And it's just, it's exposition-y. You know, when I put this group together, I decided that, No, just cut the promos. We're going to have a match and we're going to kick your butt type of promos. And then the drama of the tension of the group can come through the angles, or you can do it through a hidden camera type thing or something like that. But these, we've paid for time for the promo thing, and we're doing wacky shtick with Brandon again. And we're, hey guys, we all need to get on the same page right now.
The other thing is that this just steps on the MJF Pinnacle angle, which is the exact same thing.
Yes.
You don't need That's to have two of these heel factions doing a against cast sort of thing, but like right down to who is the shaky plank right now. It's the tag team, right? It's the Bucks in the AEW or the Undisputed Elite or whatever, and it's FTW in Pinnacle. This is a much more boring version of the Pinnacle thing, in part because it's not like, at least for me, you're like super enthused to see the Bucks become baby faces again or whatever. Like the FTR becoming baby faces has been, I felt, earned. They've connected with the audience. They've done it over weeks here. I think this match next week where both of them just like turn in like a classic and really work their asses off against one another is going to be, it's going to be something that's going to endear the fans to them even more as a babyface act. I think that'll be the net result, and it'll be kind of brilliant on that front. And I think that just having, you know, the Bucks do the exact same angle, it's redundant. And it probably steps on FTR's thunder a little bit.
Here we go.
All right. Britt Baker, she's going to be a baby face in Pittsburgh. I think we need to change the Britsburg match up. I'm making like a serious point. I'm not going to like do a redundant rant. I think that this needs to be sort of a showcase for the heel in the sense that like, we need to let the heel really get established, like, and really sort of like establish like hateability, on them. And like that needs to be the focus because it's a foregone conclusion. Britt's going over. So like, we need to let like the former Vanessa Bourne, Danielle Camella here,
yes,
like really establish her character and sort of establish some degree of formidability, and like really get the crowd just hating her guts and hope that that carries over residually to the next weeks and the weeks after. I think if anything, this is actually a great opportunity for an established heel to go up against Britt Baker, even a heel that you're trying to build up, and really let them like kind of get serious heat built on them during this match. Let the crowd really hate them.
I thought Danielle did a pretty decent job for what she was given. She's not going to get signed by AEW, but it was nice to see her in a ring, actually be able to do some things for once. I think her place is mostly, she'd make a great valet, but you know, she's 36. Yeah, I don't know. If AEW wants a mid-card heel like that to fill up the thing, they could do worse than her. She has personality. She was cutting Twitter promos for the match, which were, you know, they're the usual this city sucks and their sports teams suck type thing. But she has some ability on the promo stick. So I was happy for her to get that chance.
Yeah, I've always just thought she's a person with personality, and great hair too. She does have really awesome hair.
When she straightens it, it's fantastic too. That she looked like Diane Lane. I was like, my God, she looked good on that thing. I was following her on social media. friend of a friend. So it's one of those things where I'm always rooting for her. My last point, we're going over to NXT UK. I'm going to give some credit to somebody I haven't given credit to much, but Chris has. So I'm.
Whoop guy, you're finally coming around on him.
Actually, you know what? That wasn't a bad match either. The Mustache Mountain versus Ashton Smith and Bootleg Kofi. I forgot his name for some reason.
Oliver Carter.
Thank you. Whoop guy, Bootleg Kofi, Oliver Carter, and Ashton Smith or Ashton Carter. Whatever. Not a bad match going into next week. They're building up the Mustache Mountain breakup fairly well. Here, I always like this story when it's a slow burn. Wish they'd do something with Tyler Bate, bring him over to the States or something for another run, finally in NXT normal. But also, maybe also Sam Gradwell. Hell of a street fight there against Kenny Williams. Chris's favorite feud, I think, is coming back. So we're all excited to see what happens there. Kenny.
I mean, everyone always gets on these dorky podcasts that I listen to, and they'll say WWE doesn't do long-term booking. I'll hear idiots like Jeff Hawkins say that on radio shows. And I always yell at my podcast back at it when the other guy's not talking. That guy's great. I always yell back, well, Hawkins, you twerp. What about Kenny Williams and what's his name?
That memorable guy that lost the loser leaves town match. Yeah. But
Amir Jordan. His name's Amir Jordan.
Amir Jordan. Thank you.
Yeah. What about that feud, Hawkins? I yell back at my podcast, and that's gone nearly 3 years.
The wild boar was gone for like 8 months. Came right back. So yeah. But Sam Gradwell, underappreciated brawler. I mean, he had that one with Rampage Brown that was really, really good as well. And this was no different. In a different time and place, you could give him a little bit of a run in NXT, get some things, see if there was something there, and then bring him back. But, you know, they don't know.
I like him. He's
now cut off the mohawk, by the way. He now looks more normal, but yeah.
He's just got a certain level of intensity that I think really works. I actually liked the mohawk too. I didn't mind it. No, I thought the mohawk totally worked for him.
Anything else on your end?
In terms of NXT UK, no. I'm just seeing if there's anything. Geez. Wesley versus Zion Quinn.
God. Oh, God. Wesley took a forearm to the face here. That just.
Whew. Not off to a great start.
They give him the sobby promo and then they just beat the crap out of him. How can you root for a guy like that? Sorry. Oh, I'll bring up one thing. Oh, you didn't watch SmackDown tonight, did you?
I did not. Oh, okay. One last thing though there. Look, Roxanne Perez wasn't bad.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah. Roxy is great.
Yeah, and I like JC Jane. I think JC Jane.
And JC Jane, yeah, JC Jane and her had very good chemistry. I think it's very weird because we all thought JC Jane was going to be the weak link next to Priscilla Kelly, or the former Priscilla Kelly, but JC Jane's the worker of the two. So it's I thought that was a fun
no thing. No. It's the two carrying Mandy Rose is really what it is.
Yeah, that's true as well. I will not bring up my point from SmackDown because it's not terribly important. But let's just say they're taking an interesting tact with Lacey Evans because they ran another one of those vignettes that deals with her life, and the reaction on Twitter is interesting. But I think it's gonna work with the fans somewhat.
What is it about? Well, like, you know,
it's a very bootstrappy story about how, you know, she was this week it was about how her dad would leave and her mom left, and dad would make more money, but that meant he could spend more money on drugs and stuff like that. And reason she does her own makeup is because she never had a mom around to do it for her, so she now does that at her shows too. They're doing what is kind of an anomaly in WWE, and actually using the person's real life to help them get over, as opposed to smack them around a bit, like, you know, like Bailey and Cora Jade. Here's their, I've always been a WWE fan. And then they go out and get beat the next time. This one, it's, we're going to make her a sympathetic character so that you root for her later. And they've never really been one for sympathy.
I don't hate it.
I don't hate it either. It's a risk.
It's a risk. They need to change their presentation. I think our cynicism is that they can't be disciplined and stick to a new change. And that's a fair criticism.
Well, the cynicism is that they do all these things to make you like her. Then the first match out there, she goes back to being a heel. That would be perfect WWE. It's like, oh, we've heard about her story for a number of weeks. Oh, and she's hit Naomi in the back of the head.
Yeah, and how long until she's just Lacey, right?
Yeah. Although Lacey Evans is a WWE name, so it's, yeah.
No, but that, so was Antonio Cesaro.
That's very, very true. You're correct.
Yeah.
So. I have nothing else. I'm ready to close up the Lazy River.
I am ready to close up the Lazy River as well.
This has been Shake Them Ropes as per usual. He is Chris Novembrino. You can follow him at DWATG. That stands for Don't Worry About the Government. Patreon.com/Don't Worry TV. Is that it?
Yes, don'tworry.tv is don'tworry.tv is our homepage. Patreon.com/DWATG is the Patreon.
I am Jeff Hoggins. You can follow me at CrapGame13 on the Twitter. I just wisecrack all day about wrestling. That's pretty much what I do. Also do a show over on the Fight Game Media Network called The Dynamite Show with one Paul Ace Fontaine every Wednesday. Patreon.com/FightGameMedia. $5, hot takes on every single segment of AEW, so I don't have to do it on this show necessarily. I get my ice cold takes on this show. You can just follow our show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word, on the Twitterverse. Once again, thanking our sponsor, HelloFresh.
HelloFresh.
HelloFresh.com/VOW16.
That's the way Hawkins says it. I always say VOW16.
Or VOW16 to get deals. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Network. Podcasts for every type of fandom. New Music of the Mat with our friend Andrew Rich just dropped, talking about Lex Luger themes, as well as we have the flagship with Joe and Rich, five star match game, and other things I can't remember now because it's late and I haven't gotten a lot of sleep, because I also, like Chris, have sleep apnea.
Okay, well, that's fine. I just hope that Hook buys Twitter.